My name is Robert Hanson, Dr. Robert Hanson. I got a PhD in acoustic comfort from University College London, and I qualified as a barrister in 1996, practiced at the bar in London, moved across to Hong Kong, set up my own company called Silk Rope Chambers Limited, which works with over 50 London Queen's Council barristers, 16 of which are Deputy High Court judges. So that's basically about me. Am I happy in Hong Kong? I don't think anywhere in the world is happy, but Hong Kong was the happiest place to live in the world until COVID came along. Everything about it was perfect. The climate here, the warm weather, the long daylight hours, very free place and also a very safe place. So it was one of the best places in the world to live. Then in 2019, there were essentially big protests, possibly called riots, against what was called an extradition bill, because Hong Kong wanted to have an extradition bill with China in 2019. And people didn't really want that. So 1 million people marched one Sunday afternoon. And then 2 weeks later, 2 million people marched on the streets against it. The government, this is one thing to learn from protests, just as analysis, were not concerned about this at all. That marching on the streets didn't bother them in the slightest. However, when the protesters started to block the roads, to stop the mass transit railway system running, to block the revenue tower, and actually to invade Parliament, literally break into Parliament, remove all the symbols of China, at that point, things got very, very unstable. And the government backed down and pulled out the extradition bill. It backed down on it. However, the protest did continue. And they said, we want to have universal suffrage, i.e. to be able to directly elect the chief executive of Hong Kong. Later that year, there was something called local elections, and the people who were against China took just about all the seats. That they almost a complete victory for the people against China, the anti-China people, if you like. And in 2020, there's going to be the big elections, the big parliamentary elections, and there's big fear in mainland China, in Hong Kong, that this result could be repeated in the major elections. That's the real Houses of Parliament equivalent of in Hong Kong. And that would essentially give power to people against China. Conveniently, we had Event 201 in 2019, a lot happening in 2019. And that gave a scenario, what would happen if this COVID thing came on the scene? What could we do about it? And then lo and behold, towards the end of 2019, COVID did appear in China. And people were very scared. There's lots of media talk about it. And as a result of that, the protests stopped in Hong Kong. Very convenient. And so what COVID did was it ended all the protests in Hong Kong. The timing is, you know, it could be natural, but I would be very suspicious of that timing. With the way the riots, Event 201, and then real COVID coming along as predicted by Event 201, and then China then gaining control. And once it got control, it brought in a national security legislation, no protests against that. And that resulted in essentially people that had been protesting against the government ending up in prison, and the opposition parties also ending up in prison or leaving Hong Kong. So it totally turned Hong Kong around.
I myself visited Hong Kong around about 2018, didn't see any sign of protests at the time. It did certainly seem, as you say, an absolutely almost idyllic place. People very contented, happy, have the time to pass the time of day with you. You know, people not sort of rushing around looking frantic, and and also I was quite surprised. You know, quite a Christian country. So with young school children saying, "Oh, we're doing a project about the Bible and blah blah blah," this sort of thing. Now, of course, that might well be something which has been sort of deliberately put in place to make things difficult for the Chinese government. But what I'm really interested in now, Robert, is the sorts of measures the Chinese are bringing in? Because I'm quite aware that there are links, I believe, at the top level between the US and China, and you know, through individuals like Henry Kissinger, and you know, cooperation on the military level with the Chinese using US military satellites to do surveillance of their own people, with deals done there. Can you just give us an idea of the sorts of measures which are being taken now in Hong Kong to track people using COVID, I guess, as a kind of excuse, really?
COVID has provided the perfect excuse to track, trace, watch, monitor, and control people. That's the one thing that's very noticeable. As of the 1st of November, you were not allowed to enter any public building unless you had a QR code on a mobile phone. So no government buildings. That means no libraries, no post offices, no hospitals, no government building unless you had this code on your phone. And as of yesterday, you're not allowed to go into any restaurants or eateries unless you have the app on your phone. So it started slowly where government buildings, and now it's moved to the private sector with restaurants, cinemas, places like that. You've got to have an app on your phone.
Because that means that these mobile phone is now compulsory to live.
It is. I mean, it's not just, I mean, I've got a very old 25-year-old Nokia telephone. It does not allow any downloads of any apps whatsoever. So I don't go to post offices. I don't go into government buildings anymore. And I will not be going to restaurants or eating out in the future. So you've gone from complete freedom in Hong Kong. I mean, it used to be way, way, way freer than England, much freer than England. You could say just about anything you wanted. There was no restriction on that at all. And yet it was the safest place, I think, in the world to live. And it was wonderful. But now it's, whoa, rigid, tight control of everything you do. Very, very rigid. And with the national security law, if you criticize the government in a negative way, you could land yourself in a lot of trouble. I.e., you could just be picked up, put into jail, and having to wait for a trial. So it's gone from freedom to very rigid control at 100 miles an hour.
The QR codes are, you know, these are becoming ubiquitous everywhere. It's a bit like the kind of barcodes. And Tim Cohen, I was interviewing recently, said these have there's three sixes in them. Well, I mean, this starts to look as if this is something which everybody has to have in order to basically have a life. But what about this whole idea of, you know, coming across this National Security Act there, where, you know, you can actually be potentially arrested just simply for criticizing the president, this kind of thing?
Yes.
I mean, I'm wondering, because I'm chatting to you now, are people in Hong Kong, the Hong Kongers, now having to really rein back what they say, almost in a Stalinist type fashion?
Criticism of the government and authority is virtually non-existent at the moment. Whereas before it was rampant, now it's gone from, you know, 100 to zero. That's how things are.
But surely it's been driven underground, surely?
Not really. A lot of people have just left Hong Kong. A large, large amount of young people with young families have left Hong Kong. They've just left. And the people that remain don't say anything. What will be interesting is next week there are elections in Hong Kong. And of course, only the pro-establishment parties are running. It would be interesting to see what the turnout is at that election. There might be just a silent protest, if you like, where nobody, or there's a very low turnout, which you could argue is a silent type of protest. Although, actually, the chief executive yesterday, said that a low turnout would mean that people are satisfied with the government. I'm not sure. I think that's been a bit optimistic on her part. I think my view is that a low turnout would mean that people just don't support them at all.
If there's a low turnout, it's quite clear, as you know, it should be anyway. That sounds like unbelievable spin. It should be absolutely quite clear that people are disillusioned with, apathetic about the vote. So And also calling a chief executive. You, it seems to me, are now commodities on a production line in a factory somewhere if you're being run by a chief executive.
It's always been called, prior to that, it was called a governor. When Chris Patton was here, it was called a governor. And then when China took over, it was virtually the same role. I mean, instead of Chris Patton was arguably answerable to the UK, whereas the chief executive is answerable to China. So the roles, you know, actually remain very similar, but with two different masters. And up until 2019, you didn't see too much change. You got a feeling there was some coming along, but not too much change. 2019, when all the protests and the riots took place, that's when it happened. That's when things really changed for the worse. I mean, I give you the reason why I think this was more about, and this is just my opinion, but this is more about stopping protests than any real kind of virus. You've got to look at the timing of it should stand out to anybody, the timing of everything, riots. Then you have the event 201. Then you have the real thing and everything ends. That should stand out. But on top of that, let's look at the actual numbers of deaths. 148 deaths for a full 12 months of people dying with COVID. 148 out of a population of 7.25 million. That is less than in most flu years, far less than in most flu years. So it doesn't seem to me that there's a COVID problem at all. The other thing I'd like to say is that the way testing takes place. I rang a testing lab up in Hong Kong to find out how these tests actually work. First, they cycle at 45 cycles, and the testing lab was quite clear. That would pick up absolutely anything. It's a total nonsense when you test at 45 cycles, which is what the UK is testing at. So in Hong Kong, they then drop it to 30 cycles, and that would pick up any form of COVID. And COVID has been around since the start of humanity. So there's nothing new with that. So if you look at the number of deaths and you look at the way the tests are carried out, it would suggest there is absolutely, in my view, no COVID problem whatsoever in Hong Kong or in England or anywhere else.
And okay, this is... Well, the real big picture, I don't necessarily agree with that, actually, because I think there is some. It's just that it's, you know, they're now suggesting that this Omicron variant is like a gift from heaven because it's so innocuous. It's basically like having a natural vaccine. So as people go around and catch it and then they get better, then they don't need to have a vaccine. So, but anyway, look, let's just take a step back from all of this, the bigger picture with Prince Charles and Chris Patton handing over to the Chinese. We had a piece recently looking at Yale in China having sponsored Chairman Mao back between just after the First World War, giving him loads of money to set up bookshops, publishing houses around China to foment the revolution, which finally took place around about the time of the World War II in China. So it looks as if the Americans, the Skull and Bone Society, Yale, etc., may have been behind the whole of the Chinese Communist Party.
Possibly. I mean, I would say certainly the riots in Hong Kong were external influences doing it. And that's actually one thing I would definitely agree with the chief executive about, because I observed some of those protests and some of those riots, and there were certainly cheerleaders, people that worked at the British consulate, at the British chamber, and at the British council. I recognize their faces as cheerleaders. They were there, so there's no doubt they were egging it on. And then overseas, you've got Chris Patton sticking his oar in, saying, you know, the Chinese have a right to democracy, and but they shouldn't use violence. But it was actually egging the protests on. So he was definitely egging the protests on.
Finally, the $64,000 question. Are you going to take Boris up on his offer and come back to the UK, do you think?
Yes, I want to return. I was actually going to come back last June, but I did not want to pay. This is a real bone of contention for me. A, to return, you have to take a test that's not accurate. You have to pay £240 to the British government in order for me to board a plane to return to my own country. And that £240 actually is 2 times 120. And that just happens to be the price of a Randox Owen Paterson COVID test. So what they're doing is they're forcing you, taking my money under coercion, to take a test that's not accurate for a disease that I think is not a problem. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's not a problem. The numbers do not say COVID is a problem. They do not say that. There's no data can support that. All you've got are fake data using fake tests. But the actual raw deaths, it's not a problem. I really want to emphasize that. And so all this testing is about maybe collecting DNA. It's about controlling people, and it's got nothing to do with COVID. And so I didn't come back straight away because I objected to paying this 240. And I wrote a kind of a snotty letter to Philip Davies, who was the MP when I was last in England, and also the British consulate, demanding to know where this £240 was going. They replied to me, that is a vexatious question, and they were not willing to answer into it at all. Well, now it turns out, 12 months down the line, it just happens to be going to Randox, which is Owen Paterson's firm, where he was giving receiving £100,000 a year for doing it. And to me, that is extortion. It's criminal. Yeah, it's criminal at every level. Forcing that upon people. It's criminal.
Robert, how can people follow what you do, your work? Do you have a blog or anything like that?
I don't have a blog, but I've actually just written, I've drafted for some of the protest groups in England, a letter to send to all the MPs using my legal skills to the crimes that have actually been committed by MPs. And telling the MPs that they have a duty to warn their constituents about the dangers of the vaccine. They do have a duty of care. And if they don't warn their constituents about this, and they do continue to promote this, that is a breach of duty of care. It's also misconduct in public office. And it could also amount to bribery, corruption, and extortion. That's
okay, well,
what
it'd be great
MPs
to have a copy
guilty
of that so we can put that letter up on our show page.
I've sent you a copy of it, actually, by email.
Okay,
and if you could get that up there, that'd be great. Last point I want to make, actually, I sent you another link, Pat Cash, and his mother had the vaccination.
That's right.
And she keeled over. She had two strokes and a heart attack. And she was told if she didn't take the vaccine, blood would be on her hands. Pat Cash has now gone on record as saying, well, blood on your hands, doctors, blood on your hands. And it's the same in England. We need
isn't
to be
it funny how celebrities like him, I think, isn't he a famous Australian tennis player? The media loves celebrity, except when they come up with the wrong story. Anyway, Robert Hansen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.